Good evening, everyone. Good evening. It's Paradigm Shifters again, and we're shifting the paradigm with some of you call this your favorite group, Galexus through Ginger Matro. Galexus is a channeled coalescence of beings, wonderful beings that really help guide us through dimensions and through all the experiences of third dimensional reality, trying to expand it into the higher. So welcome to the show, Ginger.
Hi.
Gosh,
great to be here.
We're glad to talk to you again. You know that?
Oh, yeah. And it's so much fun to be on your show.
It's fun for us, too. And it's fun for my listeners who really get excited when you're coming on. We would like to talk about several things. One of them this time, I really want to talk about that incredible passing that we all do, but there's usually a lot of resistance to it, on death. And wondered if Galexus is up for that. Have they been talking about that passage?
Well, yes, because so many people that I know have been getting cancer and struggling through it. And several of my good friends have died in the past year and a half of cancer. It's just been rather disturbing to see that and learning how to kind of respond to that and to be with them and to really heal with that. So it's also a tremendous feedback and reflection to myself and how do I align myself with that energy. And so Galexus has been talking about that. They actually did a seminar on cancer and on healing healing that, and it was kind of revealing on the psychological underpinnings of cancer and all that kind of thing. So what I suggest is that I'll just go into trance and you ask Galexus this, because they're generally more eloquent and more precise than I am.
I'd love to do that. I'm also going to talk to them about the fact that so many diseases reflect a certain state of the consciousness of the entire society, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's a pretty interesting topic to me as well.
I think so, too, because Galexus has talked about that specific thing quite a bit in depth, and I can see how the collective or the consensus belief systems and so on are really conducive to people being ill. So it's going to be a juicy topic. So why don't I head out now and I'll be quiet for a few seconds, and then Galexus will be with you.
And I want to say thank you to you, because we know how Galexus helps us to break up our belief systems with that great energy. Thanks, Ginger.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
All right.
So I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
All right. All right, we are here.
Hi, Galexus. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We're so glad to talk to you.
Wow, what a pleasure to be with you again.
We're very, very excited to have you here. And we want to do some heavy hitting this time. If you would mind giving us some perspective and feedback on the, how will we call it, the art of dying, or the passage of people, and how we can make it maybe smoother and learn from it. And also, we wanted to talk about cancer or diseases that are widespread in the collective in various places. And what does that mean, and what can we do about that?
All right. Sounds like you have quite a full agenda.
Yeah, well, those are deep, eh? But there's situations that we all have to face, right?
Well, that's true. Most people really don't want to pay attention to it. But fortunately, on the planet, there are quite a few people who are coming into awareness that how you live and how you die is something that can be conscious and very deliberate, and that it really enhances the passage no matter where you're at in your life, and enabling you to really transition into that those other dimensions in which you're going to be headed. And we are watching so many people making their transition. And some can do it with elegance and grace, and some others seem to have a really tough time and are very much resistant. But it has a lot to do with their beliefs about reality, about life, about spirituality throughout their life.
Well, you know, Sam, I just want to interrupt for 1 minute because I've known some people who are very conscious and even channels and so on, who when they get closer to that portal, they fight it, or it occurs to me that it's their bodies fighting it more than their spirit. Would you say that's
true?
Well,
the body is going to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's also important for you to realize that your body, as your partner, as your coworker on the physical plane, it's not just a machine that you kind of inhabit. Your body is very conscious, and it has quite a few very powerful programs in it. And one of the programs is to fight for survival, right? So, no matter how emotionally at peace you are about dying, your body's going to do some kind of fighting. What we have noticed, however, with people when they're in their death process, particularly with disease, that very often in a disease kind of situation, that the immune system, which is that which fights the disease off, which is the fighter part of the body, fails to kind of mobilize itself, right? It just seems that the person is there, vulnerable, defenseless, and the disease just, you know, comes and takes over. And it's really the instinct of fighting that the person feels, you know, we've got to fight it, you know. And in a sense, it's not appropriate for a person to get cancer and just say, okay, that's it, I die now, and give up. You know, it's not really... That's not what it's all about. Actually, the whole process of disease is about learning how to mobilize yourself, learning how to turn things around, to shift and change your reality on the spot there. And disease gives you a really huge, very big opportunity to do so. But it also has a lot to do with learning how to bring up all those issues that on a psychological level trigger it in the first place, and how to process stuff, how to come to peace with all the stuff that gets stashed away and hidden in your psyche. The thing is that human beings have a unique path. When you choose as a light being to come and manifest and materialize in a body on the physical plane on Earth, what you also have agreed to do is to hide from yourself the full awareness and knowledge of yourself as a divine being.
Right.
And part of what you wanted to do here was to kind of learn how to discover yourself, how to create from scratch, how to use your imagination to remember, and how that influences all the interesting things that you can play with on this planet. It was a choice that you as souls made, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what that means, though, is during your life, this capacity to hide the truth from yourself is also added on to all the emotional interactions and issues and dilemmas and so forth that you encounter as a child, being powerless and being at the mercy of your parents and whatever dysfunctional stuff and patterns they've got. And so you end up hiding a lot of stuff from yourself.
Hmm.
And this stuff hidden from yourself, on top of the failure to see or to remember the divine being that you are, will lodge in the body. The body has to hold it. The body has to take care of it in the unconscious mind.
Mm.
Okay, now the unconscious mind is the part of you, okay, that determines the translation between thought and belief and all the raw materials of your life, the belief and reality, awareness and attitudes and choices and all those kinds of things that you made, and translates that into your physical form and translates it into physical manifestation. When people do or
want
to do
manifestation. You mean for healing or for illness? You mean for either way?
For anything, for any kind of manifestation, mm-hmm. the unconscious mind is where the translation occurs.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. If that's where the belief gathers up the electrons and substance and the illusion and places it into a format that you can recognize as something physical, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, but what that also means is that the unconscious mind has to hold a tremendous amount of beliefs, attitudes, and so forth and so on that have to be held there, because if they were to manifest into the physical plane, physically manifest, it would not be a pretty sight. So you basically try to stuff it down in there and not deal with it. But it's like putting it in a closet, and over time, you keep adding stuff to it. At some point, it becomes so real that your unconscious mind begins to translate it into physicality.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. And it becomes so real, so important, so true to you,
mm-hmm.
okay, and it becomes so big that you can't really ignore it anymore. You can't keep it stuffed in there, and so it translates through as illness or as accidents or as physical circumstances of some sort. Like some people, rather than get sick, mm-hmm. will have an accident,
mm-hmm.
a car accident or something, and then that discharges this cachet of crap that's in there. Okay.
So
a lot of people, after they have a heart attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be recovering just fine from their heart attack, their personalities shift a bit. You know, because they've discharged, you know, a whole bunch of this backup into the physical plane. Cancer is one that is done often a little bit more slowly than an accident or a heart attack or something that has an acute, intense, sudden, you know, move through. It tends to be more, develop more of a chronic kind of underlying tension, strain, resistance, mood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so cancer, most of the time, takes a while to kill a body.
It's kind of a suppression,
isn't it? And the reason for that is because mm-hmm. it's bringing it up and slow enough that hopefully the person who is having it, who is experiencing it, has the time to be able to untangle a whole bunch of emotional debris, to be able to clean out the cache, to come to peace with all the past and to deal with all that emotional stuff and all the beliefs that came with it, and to be able to change it. It gives you time to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what I heard years ago was that cancer very often is triggered by, for example, somebody goes through a big crisis, and about 2 years later, it emerges. Does that make sense?
Well, it depends on what the nature of the crisis is,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because if you notice, a lot of people have diabetes.
Right.
Okay, or heart disease. You know, those are the other two biggies that go along with cancer, right? And so the choice that a person makes as to what condition their body's going to take has a lot to do with the amount of stress that they've pushed underneath and that they haven't dealt with.
And now, lineage, does it come from lineage and cellular structure?
Yes, it can do that, but then you also have to understand that the unconscious mind is a collective thing,
mm-hmm.
okay? So therefore, you're picking up beliefs from your parents and from your lineage that are translated through the unconscious mind into physical form, and therefore you inherit, quote-unquote, you inherit their beliefs, you inherit their belief structures about reality, and you can't, you know, you're going to pick them up. That's just what growing up means. And you pick them up. And so that's what you inherit. The DNA is actually the program of your future. It's not really the program of your past.
Hmm.
And a lot of people aren't aware that your DNA changes according to where you think you're going.
But where you think you're going could be developed from your past, right? You know what I mean? It's like
that's
you could true. Get locked in.
You could
in.
Pick it up from your parents, that the parents went a certain way and that you're going to go a certain way. look at the whole program of aging in your culture. Mm-hmm. This is an example of the unconscious mind and how it works in the collective. Everybody ages. That's just the program.
Mm-hmm.
You've inherited it through the belief that it's such a solid belief. It's as strong a belief for most people as a belief that, a chair is a solid physical object.
But I thought more than inherited, we were programmed by, I think Lazarus says, by other species to have those limitations, to have those programs so we won't live too long. Is that right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. But it also has given us the opportunity to have free will and choice. So therefore, just because cancer, diabetes, or heart disease shows up in a person doesn't mean that they're choosing to exit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It means that it's an opportunity for them to clear out some of their emotional cachet, some of their belief, detrimental belief systems,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there are people who actually do that when they get cancer, and they are the ones who enable themselves to go into remission.
Mm-hmm. So
now, there's no judgment about people who don't go into remission, right? Because for some people, they have chosen that as their exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really tell. And the person has the free will throughout the whole process to change their mind.
Well, that's interesting. So that is essentially a near-death experience when it comes to that. Is that right?
It's kind of like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not an out-of-body experience, but it's in a sense a person will play with the thought of death in their mind, which will give them a certain perspective on life.
Hmm.
You know, a lot of times people who totally ignore death and don't want to think about death, they don't live too well either. Their lives are not, they don't have the richness, the depth, the fullness, because they're avoiding a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when the option of death shows up, okay, a person mm-hmm. gets cancer and is diagnosed with cancer, the option of death shows up, okay? That certainly puts a frame of reference to the person that enables them to say, okay, now I must be about my business now, or else, you know, I'm exiting. So let me look at my life. What is it I really want in
mm-hmm.
my life?
Mm-hmm.
It makes people start really paying attention.
You start living.
Present.
They start actually living or starting to wake up, eh?
That's what you've probably noticed with people who have successfully, beaten cancer, as they call it, or gone into remission, that they find, wow, this was almost a gift
mm-hmm.
because I'm living life, the life I love now, which I didn't before the cancer. So that's the option, but it's your free will option. You can choose that, and then you can choose also, well, I'm not going to pay any attention. I don't want to think about death. Here, give me some drugs. Give me some surgery. I'll just follow whatever the doctor says, and not do any, thinking about myself. I'm just going to continue on this path because I really do not want to look at that cachet that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's your free will choice.
Well, Alexis, because we always access that cachet, as you call it. Can we access that?
Well, that's what disease does. Disease actually brings it up to the surface. If you will notice, people who get cancer, they get very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
People who have diseases like a heart attack, basically is discharging issues around heart chakra stuff, around love stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, you would say that love issues are actually at the foundation of all illness.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that some of the people, for example, getting ovarian cancer or lung cancer, so on, that has a lot to do with their emotional storage, doesn't it? Where they stick their fears and
yeah, everybody stores it in some place that is in resonance or in frequency with their issue,
mm-hmm.
with the core of their issue. That's why it's so helpful to have something like Louise Hay's list of body symptoms and what the themes are of those, like, for example, thyroid cancer. Okay, what does the thyroid mean symbolically, emotionally? What is the what is the function and purpose of the thyroid, and how does that translate into our intangible selves? And okay, let's look at healing that issue,
mm-hmm.
okay, because mm-hmm. that's where it's showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's a gift, in a sense, from your body to say, here is where you've been stashing it, because this is where it's the issue or related to this organ or this system.
I find it fascinating that, for example, prostate cancer is absolutely mammoth. It's a huge, huge thing amongst the whole collective of our beings right now. And that, to me, says something about our species, about our society, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. One of the things that the channel and her husband Daniel discovered through their years of working on their relationship, that they had patterns in their relationship that were very dysfunctional, very painful, and they just didn't understand where it was coming from, but they finally deduced that it was cultural, right? So
mm-hmm.
they were working on cultural beliefs and so on, when they realized that there's this whole code, there's this man code.
Right.
Okay, and the man code has to do with enlists the aid of the inner slave driver, which is the negative ambition or negative motivator
mm-hmm.
inside you. Everybody gets, on some level, this negative motivator.
Right.
The woman code is a derivative of the man code. That's because it's a male chauvinistic setup that currently is in function and operation on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so the man code is that you are valued according to your gender, your race, and most of all, your financial or wealth status.
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so men are under tremendous pressure to succeed
mm-hmm.
in order for them to be able to be accepted by other men and for them to be able to get the best selection of women.
Mm-hmm.
And women are attracted to men with power and money,
mm-hmm.
right? Because women say, oh, good, this man will be able to raise the children. We will be able to raise the children in really good circumstances and give them their best.
Right. And their power center is in their prostate area, isn't it?
The power center of the man code, of all this stuff dealing with gender, all issues dealing with gender, get stuck in second chakra, which is the sacral chakra and the sexual organs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So prostate cancer is a outgrowth of the a literal kind of outgrowth through the unconscious mind of this tremendous pressure to be someone that is successful, financially successful, powerful, adored, looked up to, respected, admired, and all this kind of thing that came with a male chauvinistic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure is relentless, and it gets worse as a person gets older.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a man gets older, he starts to fall in his ranking in the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
The top ranking is probably, we would say the top ranking would be a white male, good-looking, wealthy, around the age of, 30 to 33.
Oh, God.
That's the ultimate.
Most of the guys I know are a little off the wall around 30.
Right. Men don't generally tend to get it together by 30.
No.
So hence the pressure, okay? The tremendous pressure. The peak earning years are generally in the late 40s into the 50s
right.
for men who stay on their financial track. But you see, not that many men are capable of really doing that. And the process to be able to do that means that you have to submerge and put into your cachet all those other aberrant motivations that do not lead towards more wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so those other motivations may be to create, to go on, to travel and have adventures, to love deeply, to write poetry, to go and meditate on the mountaintop. It could be all sorts of things. But it is suppressed. It is totally denied in favor of staying on this kind of financial track and driving oneself. Now, this is the key that brings the disease here,
mm-hmm.
is driving oneself, motivating oneself by guilt and fear.
So it's a kind of a suppression, but it's also a dissonance in the number of suppressions. It's a lot of controversy inside.
Well, the guilt and fear are really high-level motivators for people.
Okay.
If you feel guilty that you're not fulfilling your duty, and that's important for you to fulfill, and that you're afraid that if you don't fulfill your duty, you'll be seen as a very bad person, you know, you're going to get your ass up and go do your duty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a motivator of guilt and fear, and the fear of scarcity, of poverty, drives so many people just to keep pushing, driving.
Mm-hmm. It sure
That's
does.
Why we call it the slave driver.
So if we go into the collective cancers, for example, and we think of the man code, prostate cancer, but also then we have a lot of ovarian and breast cancer on the feminine side. Would
yes.
you say that's an equivalent stress where we're
trying? That's the equivalent stress, but it's the same process. It's derivative. Women's pressure, unlike men's, is not to make money. Women's pressure is to be good enough, to be a good girl, to give, to be helpful, to support others enough.
And to nurture, yeah.
To nurture, to give. Their pressure is to give of themselves, to sacrifice of themselves for others. That's the highest example of love and all that kind of stuff for a
but
woman.
But it's interesting because that's not respected in our society at all, is it?
What's that?
Being nurturing, to give of yourself, is not so respected.
No, it's expected. It's a duty. It's an obligation. It's not something that is beautifully free and can be done according to the nature of the woman. It has to be something that it's like her track, she has to do it. And women who get onto a business track are in double trouble because they have to take on the man code part of achievement and achieve, and at the same time they've got to be good women.
Mm-hmm.
This is very debilitating and stressful for women.
I think so. I think it's really difficult. Mm-hmm.
And because women are expected not to be whoever they want to be. What if the woman wants to go and meditate on a mountaintop? What if the woman doesn't want to have children? What if the woman wants to be free and travel and discover ancient civilizations or whatever? What if the woman wants to do stuff that is not really culturally a good woman thing to do, right? What in the world is a woman going to do? Well, she's going to feel guilty about it.
She's
going to feel anxious that nobody's going to value her or love her or support her if she goes off and does her own thing.
But even if she has that worked out in her mind, she may be having at a subconscious level
level, she will continue to worry.
Mm-hmm.
She will have the conflict between being who she is and doing what she wants to do and what gives her joy and the lack of support and all the amount of judgment that comes to her from the other or assumed judgment from the consensus. Men have the same thing.
Well, it's intriguing to me that this whole GMO thing is basically screwing up our food supply, so the nurturant is being messed up. And so simultaneously, we have a lot of people with dropped immune function, which you mentioned earlier
yes.
in the cancer thing. And I'm going, that sort of helps me see what the spread of illnesses are and how they're subconsciously driven, I'd say. Hey?
Yeah, the thing is that it's all about loving yourself.
Hmm.
And when you love yourself, you can love others. If you love yourself, you generally will have a good, strong immune system. You will love your life, you will love yourself, you will give yourself by your own personal authority to do what it is that you love, right? So you will be a happy person, regardless of whether it coordinates with what other people think you should be doing or not, right? So loving yourself is like really, really important for health, okay? Now, loving yourself is seen on the physical level, and physical nurturing, physical love, as being able to receive food and nourishment to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cannot absorb and utilize the nutrition in your food, you see, your body is feeling starved. It doesn't feel loved.
Mm-hmm.
And GMOs do this. They in a sense, are saying, here is supposed to be food, right?
Mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have all the structures that the body recognizes,
mm-hmm.
all the molecular structures, all the chemical processes. There are various kind of tracks, you know, that mm-hmm. you do this process and then it leads to that process. There's a whole strings of these that go in digestion that happen, you know.
Yeah, and antidotes,
GMOs,
a lot of nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there. These pathways and these stages are broken up,
mm-hmm.
and so the body cannot get nutrition from it. So it's kind of like a new version of eating food with empty calories.
Mm-hmm.
It's like overly refined foods are the same way. You cannot really absorb them because they don't have any nutrition, really.
Mm-hmm.
You're having to kind of cope with, generally, most of the refined foods are high in carbohydrates, so your body is trying to adjust to a level of carbohydrate that in nature was not created to be nurturing to your body.
Right, right. It's a very intriguing, widespread reality, which is, I think, like what you're saying to me is that, and hopefully to listeners, that the impacts can be antidoted if we realize how our thinking and feeling and belief structure has been distorted by a lot of cultural influences, and then we can undo that. Is that right?
Well, yes. The whole process of healing yourself, really, is about letting go of that part of you that you don't love, that you mm-hmm. don't accept of you, where that's what you stash in the cachet, you don't want to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is the parts of your shame, your feelings of unworthiness, your rage and your anger at being forced to be a person and do things that you don't want to do, right? All of that gets stashed away and hidden away so it doesn't conflict with what you feel you must do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So going in there and opening it up, especially if you get ill, then here you are, you know, basically unable to work. You're lying down, you're resting, you've got to rest when you're ill,
mm-hmm.
and in this process, you are by yourself. You are with you,
mm-hmm.
and you have to come to terms with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it consciously and deliberately, when you're healthy, loving yourself and finding out what the impact of that is in living your life, to be able to do things that juice you rather than being motivated by guilt and fear, or continuing to push yourself to be a good person or a successful person or a smart person or the right person or whatever it is, that you become who you are, then you will also be on a consciousness level in which you will be aware of your food and you will select the food that is right for your body. Your body will tell you, if you listen to it, what is really right? What has the nutrition for it? What your body should eat, what it should not eat.
Mm-hmm.
It will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to love yourself enough to be able to hear your body tell you. Because if you've overridden all your own impulses for too long, you can't hear your body say, wait a minute, that's hard. Don't give me any more of that. You don't hear the body say that.
Well, all no, sometimes it numbs you, right?
Upset stomach or something, you know.
Sometimes it numbs people, too, so they can't hear it themselves.
Yeah, a lot of people are so upset about the sacrifice of their true nature and are resisting the slave driver, resisting the guilt and the fear. They think that they're kind of off the game board. They think that they're not being ruled by guilt and fear. But what they do is that by their reaction to it, they go into escapism and they numb themselves out. And they're even worse off.
So let's cycle back to talking about death, because I think this is all like the predicator, isn't it? That when we go through the process, there can be tremendous healing.
Yes, and what's so amazing is that in the process of dying, those who get the option to do it a bit more slowly rather than not being killed instantly in an accident or something like that,
mm-hmm.
But those who actually have cancer or some disease that is progressive and they have every opportunity to nurture themselves, to take care of themselves, to learn how to love themselves, to find out who they are and so on. As they do that, Very often, even though they've chosen a disease that's going to kill them, they've chosen their death track, they've chosen it to be, that's their exit strategy. Now, you don't really know until it gets to a certain level whether or not it is a person's exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is, what you notice around the time of death and just prior to death, or just right around death, depending on a person's consciousness, if they're in a spiritual path, you will see it quite a bit prior to death. Magic will start happening. Interesting experiences will emerge. Just beautiful connections and awarenesses and awakenings and so on. And so, for a person to die well, using that exit strategy of a disease like cancer, they will find that near the end or close to their death, there will be a breakthrough in which they discover loving themselves. They become at peace.
Aww.
And if you will notice, most people, even people who have no clue about spirituality,
mm-hmm.
even atheists, okay,
mm-hmm.
can come to a place that near death they begin to get awarenesses to the other side, awarenesses of something greater, and awareness of themselves, because the disease is basically working off and discharging the cachet to where at some point they get back to who they really are.
So the disease can do that. Its function gets really mighty
at
that point.
Its function is to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It cleans the cachet out, you see. And so what happens is that all the storage bin is like emptied, you know.
Oh, that's
now,
wonderful.
For people who have cancer and then they go through the chemo and the radiation and so on, now they are just slamming themselves even harder. So they're creating more and more trauma and more pain for themselves. And there are more painful paths and there are less painful paths to dying.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people who go the traditional route with cancer, it's very painful.
Mm-hmm.
It can be painful without, you know, chemo and radiation. But chemo and radiation are actually what makes them work at times,
mm-hmm.
okay, is that they slam the body so hard that they force the intense discharge of all that extra debris in there, and force the body to fight more, force the person to pull their will together to live more.
Hmm.
And so essentially what you're seeing is that the benefits, the limited benefits of chemo and radiation are very often to kick ass the person to get their will together, because until you get your will together, your immune system will not kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how good a diet you have or how much you take care of your body, if you don't have a will to live, if it's not a will choice,
mm-hmm.
from coming from your, you know, your real self, you know, not the negative ambition, not the slave driver, not through guilt or fear to live through guilt or fear. Because there are people who are scared to die, and so they will try all their damnedest to live, but it's not a full-willed choice.
Mm-hmm.
So when they make a, but if they can make a willed choice out of loving themselves, this just will turn it around, and people will, despite whatever damage is done to them through medical practices, will come out of it.
Hmm. But the cachet, when you talk about dumping the cachet through illnesses, sometimes I wonder about whether medications make that kind of process impossible because people lose their mind. You think the mind rises past it?
Well, see, that's part of the problem is a lot of times when people approach death, they're in pain, and they haven't and those who haven't processed some stuff, their stuff, really still don't have their will together. They don't know who they are. And so the pain is really great. So they end up on painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're numbed out. Now, what happens is that at the time of death, when it comes to leave the body, they will get it. Everybody gets it. But they may not get it while they're still in their body.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get that peace only once they've crossed over.
Mm.
But the opportunity that you have as conscious beings is to be able to get it while you're still in your body, to be able to activate your soul, to activate your passion, to activate your will, to step into your true self, to own who you truly are. And in that process, your body, as your very willing, you know, co-partner in this reality, will be able to dump the cachet and detox, in a sense, detox you, and fight whatever it is. Get mobilize the immune system and get that stuff out of there.
Okay. So, let me see. I want to go in 40 directions, but usually I do. When we talk about karma or whatever we want to talk about, like the past, the way of describing past life experiences or subconscious downloads in us before we're even born, mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about how you perceive all that?
All right. Now, are we doing it in the context of illness, or are we doing?
Yeah,
are we
because
going
I'm thinking
another tact here.
No, I think it's in like when people are dying, and you're saying they can dump the cachet, and then we're talking about medications and so on. And when I think of dumping the cachet, I think of people releasing themselves from, for example, reactions, resentments, beliefs mm-hmm. based on those things and so on, and I immediately jump to karma. So if a person goes through with all of that intact, is that where karma comes from? Is that...
Well, actually, karma is a philosophical belief system.
Right.
Right? And it's not really authentically into the unconscious mind, into the body, except that it does come through the consensus. So if you believe... If your parents believed in karma, or if it just makes so much sense to you that you think, oh, this is absolutely the truth, you know, then only then does real karma really apply that much. What karma is really about, or what it was about initially, and the term karma is generally a kind of a lower level consciousness orientation to this concept, is that you have a lot of themes that you want to explore through various lifetimes.
Right. Okay.
You want to get a whole range of interesting experiences before you decide to leave the physical and return to the divine, which is beyond birth and death. Okay. So, in your process, as you come in, you explore all sorts of stuff, and one of the things that you explore is shame. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you explore is rage, pain, and violence. You explore all these things. And it's part of the adventure, and you wanted to experience everything. You want to experience all the highs. You wanted to experience all the lows. Now, what most people think of as karma is where if you do something really nasty, so let's say, to somebody else, like you kill somebody, mm-hmm. okay, that this becomes kind of a blot on your soul, mm-hmm. and that you're going to have to come back and work through this in some way or another and either be killed by that person or be killed or suffer something for having done that despicable act, okay? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think of that, okay, as you sow, so shall you reap. Well, that's true. As you sow, so shall you reap. But you have to understand that if you kill somebody in a lifetime, it may be that that person says, this is my exit strategy here. Would you do the honors?
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
And it's your response and reaction to this person that determines whether you think you really need to work with that or not. For example, if a person is really a badass and treats people terribly and becomes a kind of like a petty despot and just, you know, ruins people's lives and so on, then he may, you know, when he crosses over and he does his life review, he's going to look at all this pain and trauma that I gave all these people, and I didn't have any compassion whatsoever. So, you know, I think it might be really good for me in a next life to focus on compassion and learning how to have compassion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, oh my gosh, I'm going to be punished. It's not about, oh, I'm so bad, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, whip me with 1,000 lashes or kill me hundreds of times. No, it's about, this is fascinating. Look what I did. This was I created all this negative impact, and I didn't have compassion. I didn't understand it. I didn't see what I was doing.
So does it matter that you know or don't know the people that you meet in this life? What I mean is you're saying it's not a direct retribution. It's not a direct...
No, it's a choice that you make with your team when you're doing your life review on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide, okay, this coming lifetime, I'm going to have the theme of compassion. Now, how do you learn compassion? A lot of times you learn compassion by suffering. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you get cancer, for example, and you're suffering, here you've been really, you thought you were like super duper healthy person and da-da-da and achieving and all this kind of stuff. And then you get cancer. The first place to have compassion is for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step of loving yourself, let's say. So it's not really about you have to go find these people and do something to make it up to them or that they have to come into your life to punish you. You see what we're saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of how you decide you want to learn and a certain experience so that you get this full range of experience so that ultimately you learn love.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, you want to learn how to love completely, wholly, absolutely, 100% unconditionally. You want to do that because that's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the divine you, and that's your way back. And in the process of doing that, you create all sorts of adventures
mm-hmm.
in your life. Now, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, they can be perceived if you can step into the greater you and look at it, the you that makes these kinds of decisions that you might say are karmic
mm-hmm.
in their nature, making the choices to themes. If you look at yourself suffering from a higher level, you can see the opportunity that is, and you don't hold grudges against yourself or against other people. And you don't even hold grudges against the GMO companies. You don't hold grudges against the medical system that screws you up. You don't hold grudges against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have the opportunity to see this as a personal journey where you learn what it is you wanted to learn. And what you want to learn is about love. Most people with cancer, for example, have lost love.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of love that was lost.
Mm-hmm.
They're still seeking it. And cancer very often gives you the opportunity to learn how to receive love. People help you out. You have to be assisted. You have to be nurtured by others. Sometimes you just can't do all of it yourself. And then you learn to love yourself, have compassion for yourself. And that's the gift. And then you can see it that way.
Mm.
One of the dear friends of ours who got cancer, and she had ovarian cancer, and she got it removed and so on. One of the issues for her, because second chakra is also your generative creative chakra, right?
Right.
So one of her issues is that as a highly creative person, she wasn't doing it. She just wasn't doing her creativity. She was kind of, her life was living on hold, waiting to find a love relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, she was looking for love outside of herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cancer came, she got the surgery, they removed it, they said, we got it all. And she went through a little bit of radiation afterwards, which is generally de rigueur for that kind of surgery. And we said, you know, most people, when they get a cancer and so on, if they don't change, okay, then the cancer says, well, I guess you didn't get it, and it'll come back.
Hmm.
If you notice, there's a lot of recurrences.
Oh, yes.
And when the recurrence comes, it's generally more intense. It's generally heavier, more dangerous. It's like, okay, you didn't get it when it was easier. You know, we got to work harder here for you to get it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we said to her, you know, the way you're going to be able to do to keep this as a remission indefinitely is that you've got to now love yourself and really do your creative thing. Now, you've really got to do it. Don't just kind of, you know, think about it. Don't pine after it. Go do it. you know?
And did she?
Yes.
Ah,
she's doing it.
Okay.
So far, she's doing fine.
Good. This is great.
Right. But you see, she was able to take that second chakra, which is the ovarian, which was the all that blocked creativity that mm-hmm. was natural to her. And it was removed in the surgery, so she got the freedom of that. And all her addiction to relationships and looking for love outside of herself and all the suppression of herself that went there, it all came out in surgery. When you get surgical removal, it works. Hmm. It takes it out. Hmm. It removes an organ, yeah, but you remove the cachet, too, attached to that organ.
You do?
You remove a lot of it.
Hmm.
No,
maybe that's not a surprise to me.
Not the pattern of it, not the grid of it.
Mm-hmm.
The pattern is going to still be there. But if you don't change the pattern, then it comes back.
Well, so now we're born with a lot of the patterns, right? Thinking about astrology.
Some of these patterns are chosen. Mm-hmm. Some of the patterns we chose, and when we chose our parents,
mm-hmm.
we said, okay, we're going to be born into that social milieu with those particular type of religious beliefs or philosophical beliefs or cultural attitudes and genetic strains and attitude and you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, look at somebody who may have been, you know, that comes in to a culture and is born in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, where is the opportunity there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's a chosen thing. I'm going to come in and be born to these parents, and they're poor, dirt poor,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm going to be given all these beliefs about scarcity and so on and so on. And, you know, the imprints are there,
mm-hmm.
and they could get cancer because we know people who get cancer because their money runs out.
Mm-hmm. But then there's what's the name of the country where all the people, one of the highest values that they've got is personal happiness and so on. They wouldn't be fighting the same thing about money. They would have happiness or love as their priority.
Right, right. And if you focused on that throughout your life rather than on money and being accepted by others and you know, improving your status as a good person and being seen as, you know, okay and approved of and be seen as right and smart and important, if you let go of all that ego stuff and you went for the love and you did it early, well, it would indicate that you had made that choice before you came in, that this is going to be a lifetime. I'm going home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wrapping up birth and death. So my focus, rather than being on looking at this limitation or that limitation and learning how to overcome that and learning this, and I'm going to have the opportunity to really learn about love.
And that could be someone who crosses over early. That could be someone who chooses exit early.
There are some cases of children who have cancer and die. And they're like these incredible light beings, and everybody's just moved by them, right?
Oh.
And they got what they needed. Mm-hmm. They're gone, you know? They don't need to stay. And they also came and gave gifts to others out of their love, right? And so that can be one of the ways people do it. But, you know, right now on the planet, there are many, and many of the people who are listening right now are those people who have chosen to wrap up, you know, through developing their consciousness and developing love, to wrap up their cycle of birth and death.
Mm.
And so that's why we want to emphasize the real secret to health and to longevity, if you want it, okay,
mm-hmm.
Is love. It's a secret to being happy. It's a secret to your creativity. It's a secret to everything.
Well, if we go back to the initial question, which was about death, I guess what I'm learning, you've helped so much in this discussion, but it's all about reaching that and reaching for the love and clearing the cachet as you go. Is that right?
That's right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And really forgiving yourself mm-hmm. for having carried all that crap with you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to forgive yourself, and you're going to forgive everybody else, because most people, when they go unconscious and they stash in their cachet, they don't want to take responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically they blame other people for it. Those are people that who are still dysfunctional in their 50s because of what their mother did to them when they were a kid,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when they learned to stash their stuff, and they did that, they learned from somebody who blamed everybody else for, you know, their mother blamed or a father blamed for other society for their dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So they took on that pattern and blamed everybody else.
Mm.
And they're walking around wounded and feeling that somehow or another they're just wounded and they're just never going to get out of it. That's because the focus is on that cachet because it was seen as being victimized by others and being in the identity of the victim and not being able to come out of that identity. Disease will force a person to make a choice. Are you going to come out of victim consciousness and stop blaming the world for your problems,
mm-hmm.
for your health issues, for this and that?
Yeah.
Are you going to take your personal responsibility to forgive yourself for having played that game, that
mm-hmm.
deadly game with yourself? And stashed everything and ignored who you are, are you going to give yourself the opportunity now that you can't work, now that you're, you know, on disability or whatever, can you love yourself now? Can you forgive yourself now? Can you just clean up and start over afresh, anew, as a beautiful being, as a precious light being that you are, and allow yourself to heal with love?
Well, that's wonderful. We have to be ending this, but you know, I wanted to talk to you about multidimensionality, so I'm going to ask if you'll please come back on fairly soon and talk with us about that as well, taking us through the portal.
Yes, you are multidimensional people, absolutely.
And also tell people, because I know you have collections of past CDs that you've done on these various subjects. So,
well, actually, we have lots of CDs, but we also have a tremendous number of sound files.
Great.
That are seminars we called Love and Healing. We did these weekly for 3 years. And those of you who are listening that are interested in working anymore with some of these themes, we did one called Death, Dying, and Beyond. The Ultimate Journey.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Right, so you would go to our website, which is Galexis Spirit. That's GalexisSpirit.com. Galexis Spirit, and you click on downloads, audio downloads of, and then Love and Healing Sessions, and you look under Death, Dying, and Beyond, and you'll find that one. And you can also look at. There's a lot of things that can be very helpful as far as healing from illnesses and things like that, because we've got one on how to heal yourself and others.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have one on healing. We have one on busting that macho man complex and the good girl complex. So if people feel that and getting rid of the slave driver, which we have one that's possibly one of our most popular ones, because most people are stuck with that slave driver, and the slave driver will kill you.
Right, sure will.
Because it will not let you be you. So we also have the healthy body's balance. We have a lot of healing messages of the body. All these kinds of things that can physical body tune-up is a good one, too.
Well, that's wonderful. We have to end this now because they're going to hook us off stage. But I know people go to GalexisSpirit.com, they can mm-hmm. sign up for these or order them, whether they're links or CDs or packages.
And you can sign up for the newsletter and that kind of thing, because we do talk. We do have online conferences and things like that that might be of interest.
Probably will be of interest. I thank you so much and thank Ginger so much.
You're certainly welcome, dear one. It's been our pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Well, that was a great circuit through cultural influences on our individual death or even our collective death. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, hey, tune into my website, veronicaentwistle.com. Let me know what you think of this and other shows. Suggest guests. And if you like a session with me, veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you so much for listening. Many blessings and good night.